The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 6th of April, 2021. On the podcast day, Ed Dawson, CEO and Managing Director of Prospex Energy. Ned explains the significance of getting full environmental approval for the Selva gas field in Italy. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Coincilium, Cadence Minerals, and Lexington Gold. And at the end of the podcast, I will be highlighting two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most read RNSs. By the way, you can see these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll all see lots of the content there. In fact, there's an article there on Prospex Energy. There's one on, there's a video there with Paul Hill chatting to Dr. Adam Hill. Brothers, of course, they are. It's a, only kidding. Q&A, of course, with Onky Moon, CEO Dr. Adam Hill there. Signed some good deals today. Alien Metals is an article there. There's one on Totally as well, PLC. Plenty. It's an Avacta article. And don't forget, our COVID-19 index, biggest rise of the day is Hemogenics Pharmaceuticals, up 13% to 7.7. Biggest faller today is Silence Therapeutics, down 5.6% to 5.57. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Ed Dawson, CEO, Managing Director of Prospex Energy. PXEN is the ticker there. Ed, thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, and you've announced today full environmental approval for the Selva gas field, and we'll talk about that in a bit. Before we do, Ed, for people maybe not familiar with Prospex, can you explain what you're about, please?
Yeah, we're an AIM investment company, and we've got two areas of primary focus. Italy, that I'll expand on, we can discuss a bit more in a bit. The second is El Romeral, which is a project in southern Spain. El Romeral has an 8-megawatt power station operating with 78% spare capacity. Tarba, our local company that we have investment in, has been operating it for a month now with no incidents. That's been running well. But the exciting thing for us is what the El Romeral power station sits on. It sits on some well-known gas fields we've got very low prospects there. Historically, I think they've drilled 7 wells and 5 have been commercial successes. So that puts it in the 70%. And there are 11 prospects to go and drill at. So notionally, one or two successes with a drill bit can put the power station back to full utilization, which sort of is 4 million in revenues and equates to roughly 2 million euros of profit. So in Spain, we're just in the process of getting some well applications in. But the exciting thing today is finally environmental approval in Italy.
Yeah, exactly. Full environmental approval. So what's next here, Ed?
Well, I've described this as sort of historically as a sort of a bike road over the Alps. And I think today with this news, we've reached the summit. There's still a bit more on the journey to go, but it's largely downhill from here. Environmental approval was, in my mind, the last sort of political or major political approval needed. Mm-hmm. Listeners will know, because we've talked about it, there was a change of Italian government in February with a technocrat appointed to the ministry, and he's got on and signed stuff, so that's great. Yes. So there are a couple more steps to go. There's a what they call an Intesa, which is an agreement between the regional and national governments which is sort of a standard, and that will be the last sort of. A number of these things have to be woven together, and basically that's what that document does. And then we'll get the final grant from the Ministry of Economic Development. So we can push on with the development. We can push on getting, you know, the infrastructure in place. It'll need a kilometre pipeline. And so production, the operator is now guiding us at, in the beginning of 2022.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's exciting. I mean, it just pushes us, you know, into a major sort of cash flow situation for us.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, environmental approval these days is always touch and go, isn't it? Because we're all becoming all more aware of the environment, the impact things have. So it's good to get past that hurdle, like you say, paving the way towards that full production licence. So if it gets into production, like you're hoping, like you say, you know, will happen early 2022, what does it mean, you know, on a monetary level, the significance of this for Prospects?
Well, you know, we have been an E&P company for a while, effectively, but E, you know, has dominated, and this means the P will dominate. It means that, you know, at current prices, we will generate multiples of our annual G&A costs, which, you know, for an AIM company is not insignificant. And it means that we have an opportunity to develop out the rest of our portfolio and on the back of these strong cash flows. As I've mentioned, there are 11 prospects to go at in Spain. And Selva, the gas field, is part of a wider license. In the production area, it will also cover a couple other prospects. East Selva, which you know, is notionally twice as big as Selva, so it's good. So it just kicks us on to another level. It's going to be good.
Yeah, absolutely marvelous stuff. Okay, Ed. Well, as always, as tradition, you know, supports it. Three reasons then why someone listening right now likes the sound of the progress you're making but are not following the story. Give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add Prospects Energy to their watch list, please.
Well, the last major political hurdle has happened. We've got through that, which is great. We are trading at a significant discount, and as already flagged, you know, the cash flow will be transformational.
Excellent stuff, Ed. Good to chat to you. Like I say, lots going on, so hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're Al.
A very good morning, Justin. I hope you had a good Easter.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I genuinely get bored when the markets are shut for a while. I can handle 2 days at the weekend. But 4 days, no, I'm looking around for things to do, you know. My next hobby is like drinking or something, watching telly. I'm just trying to, what should I do here? Maybe I should take up crypto trading. The crypto market's open 24 hours a day, isn't it? Seems like.
Well, they are. I mean, goodness me, you know, you just watch. I mean, I'm getting sort of alerts through on my phone. Bitcoin's moved up. Bitcoin's moved down. Bitcoin's gone up again, you know, yeah. And it just goes all the time. So if you're a trading junkie, I mean, it's just the perfect antidote, isn't it? Because it is just literally 24/7. So you can trade your you can trade your crypto, you can trade your NFTs, and goodness knows what else. And I noticed over the weekend that Chris Akers was talking about a new crypto NFT sports card trading platform that's just launched. It raised, I think, $30 million or something, This has just launched. So, because I was chatting to somebody about this, and apparently these sports cards are all the rage as NFTs. You know, you can buy and sell them. So, and there's such a market in there now that there's somebody's actually set up a trading platform, so you can trade these things directly.
I thought that was done on OpenSea anyway. That platform, wasn't it? Is it OpenSea that raised money or not? I saw Mark Cuban and all that were involved in something, but I think it may be OpenSea, because that's one of the biggest NFT platforms there is.
It is. That's where you can go and sell art and buy art and sports cars. But There are plenty of others. I mean, it's just this huge burgeoning landscape, isn't it? You know, they're a brand new marketplace. So those, you know, the first to markets, those are going to be the ones, you know, like the ones that they start the dot-com boom, the ones that stick around. You know, those are going to be the ones that are worth money. But I think there are lots of issues. You know, as we spoke last time about NFTs, about the traceability. How do you actually legally own an NFT? All of these issues too. Whilst there are questions there, I think there are going to be NFT lawyers around now online that you can use to verify your holding.
Wow, it's a whole new industry. Do you know, I got that NFT, Kings of Leon thing, but I don't know where the heck it is. Yes. I paid for it, but there it is. Cool. All right, let's get into some stocks now. What are you looking at?
Okay, well, we're going to be talking about one NFT stock this morning. That's, of course, Coincilium, that had an update this morning. Also, I want to touch again on Cadence Minerals, you know, landmark announcement and movement for them last week with the first shipment of iron ore from Mapa, and also an update from Lexington Gold this morning on their gold exploration activities in Carolina. So, should we start with Coincilium and continue the NFT thing?
Yeah, go on then.
Okay, so there is an investor Q&A, which I found very useful, actually. It's published on the Novus Communications website. If you look at the RNS out today, there is a link to that, so you can go and have a look at the NFT. Have a look at the link to the investor Q&A, and it just provides a lot of questions answers to questions from investors, written by Malcolm Pelle and Eddie Travia, CEO of Coincilium, you know, just detailing what... you know, where the company is and so on and so forth. But also there's a really strong update this morning. The company's updated on its cryptocurrency treasury status. It's up 58% since its last update on February the 8th. Now sits at just over $3 million, $3,128,626, huge sum of money. And that's, of course, in Bitcoin, Ethereum, Icon, and the Riff, which also, yeah, there's, I think, some $300,000 denominated in Riff, which Coincilium will vest monthly over the next 19 months. So, of course, Coincilium has had a phenomenal run already this year. We've seen the shares rocket. The company's currently got a market cap of 30 million. The other week, it updated the market and the shares shot up as high as 34p intraday before settling back to 29p. Currently trading today, this morning, at 19 pence, just under 20p, giving it that market cap. But the company has evolved from being the first blockchain IPO on the Aquis market through to pivoting last year, moving course to Gibraltar, and is now underway to developing a relationship and has an MOU in place to set up a company called Nifty Labs. Now, obviously, Nifty is implies NFTs. Nifty Labs will build NFT smart contract platforms, NFT wallets, and so on and so forth, and will be developing the offering across a number of offerings and different assets across the year. In the investor Q&A, Malcolm goes into detail on some of the potential markets that Coincilium and the Nifty Labs operation will get involved in. It's a huge nebulous market, as we've already discussed. You know, we've got NFTs from Kings of Leon, of course, Beeple selling his art for incredible sums of money, and this burgeoning landscape of new platforms that are evolving as a result of it. The company also has plenty of cash in the bank as well. This is Coincilium. It's raised a further 250,000 in warrant exercises at the beginning of March. So following on from that, the company is now fully funded for all its operations through to the start of next year. And yeah, it's a 30 million. We've seen what's happened to the likes of Argo Blockchain, which of course is a Bitcoin mining company. The shares have just gone gangbusters on that. Now it's now got a market cap of some 800-900 million. What's this landscape going to look like in a year's time? Goodness knows. Malcolm also on the Q&A gives some insight into where he sees the business in 5 years' time, which is a useful read. But nonetheless, of course, CoinSelim is Aquis. It's an Aquis listed stock, which actually doesn't seem to matter now because such is the demand for the stock. Aquis, of course, is reporting big increases in trading volumes on its exchange, and of course, CoinSelim has the dual listing with the OTCQB listing in the US, which has engaged an awful lot of US investors. And you look at any of the bulletin boards over there, and they're going crazy for CoinSelim. So yeah, a very exciting year in prospect for the company, and lots of news on the way in the coming months.
Yeah, I think it's going to go pop, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, all these markets do, don't they? There's a correction, and of course, then the investors start to look at what the companies actually do, how they make their money, and what the plan is going forward. You know what the market's like, but at the outset, I mean, we're in the early days now of the NFT revolution, and it's going gangbusters. I mean, yeah, so many platforms are launching into it. So much is happening in that space that I think at the moment the trend is very much your friend here.
Yeah, no, I agree. And Bitcoin, I keep thinking it's going to roll over, and it doesn't seem to want to roll over, but sooner or later I feel it will, you know, and I think it'll roll over hard, and it'll take a lot of people down with it, and I feel people are sort of leveraged to it in some way, you know, and it may even, you know, have contagion into the real markets because such is now the spread and the power and the depth that people have. You know, it's a mainstream investment, isn't it, Bitcoin? So you know, I think it may affect general liquidity across the markets because it's just nuts. Bitcoin has risen. But I'm looking at the chart, right, and I keep seeing this all the time, that what's called a relative strength index going down, but new highs or close to new highs being attained, which means the rallies are getting weaker. And this last rally now, that of course last high of Bitcoin was like 61, closed at 61, and the last one just after that has been a bit less than that, so it's a lower high there, and the RSI has, you know, peaked lower again. It's a lower high again, the RSI. So I'm just wondering if we're in the start of a rollover here. Who knows? It could go higher again. You never know. You know, but there we are.
I think the thing is, it's still, you know, when you get commentators in the market saying, do you know, and these are, you know, well-known commentators saying, I really don't understand how Bitcoin can replace fiat currencies and, you know, become an alternative form of currency. Well, the mechanism's certainly out there. It takes a lot of electricity to generate one Bitcoin. We know that, which is probably why the price is so high. But I mean, yeah, it is this incredible market, this burgeoning market. Some analysts are saying that Bitcoin is going to be worth between $400,000 and $5,000 a coin in 3 to 4 years' time, which is completely bonkers, isn't it? I mean, it's nuts, but that is the way it's going. And there's clearly value, or investors and traders see value in Bitcoin at current levels. And of course, Bitcoin, where goes Bitcoin, goes the rest of the market. And that includes Ethereum, of course, which has a smart contract capability, and the other coins and the other tokens that, of course, we mentioned with CoinSelim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I certainly won't. I'm happy to miss out on this rally in the cryptocurrencies. I'll let it come back because it will soon. Right, it may have to rise to 100,000 before it comes back. But I'm not jumping in now. I'm happy to miss out on it. You know, and sometimes you have to have that discipline. You know, because I jumping in on rallies towards the late stage can cost you, you know. So,
I think the best approach, and I was chatting to somebody yesterday about this, and they basically put about 100 quid a month in, and they just scale in. That's all they do. They just scale into Bitcoin, whether it's high, whether it's low. And of course, you know, if it is low, then sometimes they'll pick up more. So, overall, that's probably a sensible strategy. strategy, because then, of course, if it averages down and you're still picking Bitcoin up, then your average in the end should work out okay. But yeah, where it'll be in a year's time is anyone's guess. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous. Okay, that's Coincidium. What's next, Al?
Okay, so going to talk about Cadence Minerals. And, of course, you had Kieran on last week, and there is a webinar, I think, scheduled for this week, isn't there, where Kieran is going to discuss the progress of the Emapper iron ore project and where the company is. But, you know, it was a landmark step forward for the company last week. Cadence, of course, currently trading, has share price is currently 26p, so that's a recent high for the group. It's a year high, in fact. Gives a market cap of 39 million, which, you know, given the assets it will be owning soon, is still, in my opinion, a long way under value. But then again, that's just my opinion. That's not you need to do your own research to confirm that. Nonetheless, of course, Cadence has a raft of other investments. It owns 12% of European Metals Holdings, which owns the Sinovec lithium project in Czechoslovakia. Of course, that's set to be the new hub for the European EV industry, and there will be battery gigafactories springing up around that area. It has a small shareholding in MacArthur Minerals. That's the ASX and TSX listed company that owns the Lake Giles Iron Project in Australia. There's a takeoff agreement there with Glencore worth $4 billion over 10 years. It has, of course, the hard lithium assets in Australia, across three locations in Australia. And it has a joint venture agreement in Mexico with the Sonora Lithium Project, Megalit joint venture companies. And, of course, Ganfeng, the largest lithium company in the world, the Japanese. Chinese lithium company, which now owns a big chunk of Bacanora Minerals, the operator there.
Is that part of Gangfeng style?
Gangnam, Gangfeng, Gangfeng, Gangnam. Okay, yeah. close but no cigar. So, and of course, it also has a joint venture in Australia with the Yangibana Rare Earth Project, where the Yangibana and Yangibana North assets there has a 30% joint venture there with the operator of the Yangibana project as a whole, Hastings Technology Metals. That's ASX listed. But back to Emapper. So, Cadence has completed all the stages. Of course, the Emapper iron ore project was valued by Anglo American on its books at $600 million in 2012. The mine, of course, subsequently fell into disrepair after a collapse at the port. And Cadence is at the start of that recommissioning process with its joint venture partner Indosino. The company, or Cadence, has effectively taken the asset out of administration. It has approval to run the railway, and of course, the final step along the road is the signing of the agreements with the bank creditors and the creditors that of course are owed money previously from the mine. An agreement has been made. The signatures have yet to go on the paper. Once that happens, Cadence will own 20% of the Emapper iron ore project, and that's the whole mine with that valuation. There is also 1.39 million tons of iron ore tailings sitting at the port of Santana, the Emapper owned port, and history last week was made in the first iron ore shipment since the mine's closure in 2015 was shipped. 45,000 tons was shipped from the port, and you may have seen, if you looked at Twitter and follow Cadence, of course, the pictures of the ship sailing away from the port. Hugely significant step for the group. The court have ruled, despite the banks or the creditors moving to block the shipment, the bank, the commercial court in Sao Paulo have ruled that shipment can go ahead, and that Cadence can ship enough iron ore to generate a $10 million profit, some of which will go to pay the creditors, others, the rest of which will go into to commence the recommissioning process for the Emapper iron ore mine. And of course, there's a further one half 1.39 million tonnes of iron ore still sitting there to be shipped. It went off to a buyer last week, but this iron ore has been used all over the world and is well regarded. So there is no doubt that that once the agreement is signed, the valuation of Cadence as an entity will change completely, because it will own, as I say, that stake in the mine. It will then move up to 27% at the next phase of the recommissioning, and then of course Cadence has an option to buy up to 49% of the operating mine. So lots of news to come in the coming weeks, but a very exciting step forward. And I'm sure on the Vox webinar this week, Kieran will tell you everything in more detail and give you some milestones to watch out for.
Oh, yes. I don't know who's doing that webinar. Maybe me. I don't know. Maybe somebody else. Who knows? But, yeah, no, Kieran's quite a clever guy, you know. I mean, academically clever, he sounds. He knows his stuff. You know, he's very well researched on most stuff. You know, he's one of those guys that reads a lot, you can tell.
He is. He's an encyclopedic, Kieran. He really is. But you know, this is, I think the good thing is it's been, expectations have been very much played down, because the nature of bringing something like this back to life, it's a long drawn out protracted process, and of course there are the various steps that the companies had to go through to get there. The biggest one, of course, is the final one, which is the agreement with the creditors, which has been made, and then of course the recommissioning process. And of course we know with the mineral resource estimate, the mineral resource estimate was increased by 21% from the original estimate back in 2012. So there is more iron ore there than was thought originally, which is even better. So there's everything to play for here, and it's a very exciting time. And shareholders who got involved in Cadence earlier on can, I think, be very excited about the future. Of course, I've mentioned the other projects too. There are lots of other projects that will come to fruition. In many ways, the spread of risk with Cadence makes it a very attractive investment vehicle, I think, for investors.
Yeah, the chart's looking good, isn't it? The last one,
it's looking very good. Look at that chart for the last year. It's just a series of high and lows. It's investors love charts like this. It just really shows that at each stage, okay, a bit of profit.
There's a song about that, wasn't it? Higher low.
Yes, higher love. That was it.
Oh, that was it. Sorry, yeah, sorry.
Yes,
I thought it was something similar.
That's really good. That's actually a great song for Chartists, isn't it? Actually,
yeah. It is the song of Chartists. Bring me a higher low. Okay, that's Cadence, marvelous. What's next, Al?
Okay, we spoke about this a few weeks ago. This is a company called Lexington Gold. LEX is the epic code. Yeah. Shares have traded as high as 4.3p on the year, as low as 1.9. Currently trading at 3.2p, giving it a market cap of just over 8 million. So really, there's no... this just values the assets the company has. Changed its name from Richland Resources last year, and has ownership of four and control of four gold exploration projects in South Carolina, which of course is a very benign area and a very strong area to own gold assets in. Many discoveries here in the past. The Haley gold properties are worth noting. It was explored and developed by a company called Ramarco in the early noughties, and it was sold to Oceana Gold for $856 million in 2015. Carolina was the biggest gold producing state until California took over that mantle a few years ago. But so you've got the Haley mine, which is a 4.5 million ounce asset, the Ridgeway mine, which has a 1.5 million ounce asset, which is a Rio Tinto asset, and Barita Hill, which is a 0.6 million ounce asset. Now Barita Hill is significant because one of the assets owned by Lexington Gold is about 600 metres from the Barite Hill mine. That's the Jennings Pioneer asset, and it's viewed as a potential satellite deposit. So good historical grades from that. The company has also been engaged in drilling activity and aeromag surveys, and we had an update from the group this morning. So it's been drilling the undertaking drilling at the Jones Keystone Loughlin asset, and reported this morning to say that drilling was on track. Over half of the work was completed with core logging sampling, and in all of the holes drilled, sulfide mineralization was intersected, and that sulfide mineralization that was intersected is known at the JKL asset for gold having association with it. So that's a very solid upgrade, which I think should give the company confidence to progress this. The company also completed, as it stated earlier in the year, that it was undertake fixed wing airborne surveys across the across Jones Keystone Loughlin and also the Carolina Bull and Argo assets, and two further anomalies were identified, in fact, at the JKL asset. The chief executive updated this morning said that the drilling data so far reflected excellent potential for gold prospectivity, and the intention of the company is following this to establish an initial MRE for the JKL asset. So that's very positive news for investors, you know, looking for sort of progress in the group. So no doubt we'll have some data back on those core gold assets in the coming weeks, but the price has been the price has really settled around this sort of 3 to 3.3p level. So I think any opportunities to pick it up around this level, if you're looking for a good gold asset, I think it's worth researching the company and taking a look at the website, which offers a lot of information. But this company, I think, could offer some nice upside once we get more data and detail from these the gold drilling that's been taking place.
What's happening to gold then? What's going on with it? It's odd, isn't it?
It's just I don't know. The gold is just I think the thing is as the perception of risk in the markets diminishes as COVID diminishes and we go back to work. So of course the safe haven properties of gold start to become less attractive, which is quite normal. But I think as we've said previously, just you look at the backdrop, look at the amount of money COVID has cost the global economy. I think 75 trillion and counting was the last estimate. I'm sure it's a lot higher than that now. So of course, it means that effectively that governments are having to print money to keep economies afloat, pay furlough schemes and all the rest of it. So fiat currency is effectively devalued. So solid assets, of course, like gold and precious metals and other commodities too, will always come good in the longer term. And I think the backdrop, and most analysts also support this view, that the backdrop longer term for precious metals and commodities is as good as it's ever been. In fact, we've had a lot of the big investment banks publishing articles on the next commodity super cycle that we're entering now. So I'm not worried about any correction in the price of gold in the short term.
No, don't worry about it, Al, if I were you. I wouldn't worry about it at all. At some point, wake up middle of the night sweating, and go, oh, the price of gold. My sovereign rings.
my sovereign ring. my gold bar sitting in front of my computer. What's it worth now? Yeah, oh, God.
Yeah, marvellous. All right, Al, thank you for that. And hopefully we'll speak you next weeky.
Thanks, Jess. Speak you next weeky. Don't forget the Vox webinar with Cadence Minerals.
Yeah, don't forget that. Yes. Who are we talking to? Oh, just people listening. Right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Are they talking to me then? Just in case I'm hosting it.
Well, you might be hosting it.
Yeah, cool. Marvellous. Cheers, Al. Speak
soon. Cheers, Jess. All the best.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. It is Get Tech Group at 5.77%, 27.5. At four, Fragrant Prosperity Holdings, up 13.64%, 6.25. At three, Shield Therapeutics, that's up 12.5%, pretty much, to 40.4. At two, 88 Energy, down 64%. Ugh. It's had a good rise of late, though, to be fair. And Oilex, up 40% to 0.415. Okay, it's time for the top five most read RNSs. They are as follows. By the way, most liked there is Ilika, Goliath Manufacturing Design Collaboration. Most liked, let's have a look at five. It's United Oil and Gas Discovery at ASD1X Well Abu Sinan, Egypt. At 4, Alien Metals, Andromeda sampling results. At 3, Greatland Gold, exercise of options.
Boring.
I know, you know, people follow this, some of these companies, but when the most viewed exercise of options and stuff like that, holdings in company, it's not exciting, is it? At 2, 8, no reflection on the company, just saying the actual, you know, the title of the RNS, exercise of options, which all companies do, of course. I'm not putting that in the company. I'm just saying it's amazing how many people have read that exercise of options RNS. At 2, operations update. 88 Energy. And at 1, Avacta. Distribution agreement with Abcam PLC. Most likely, like I said, is, in fact, it's Harvest Minerals. Zoetic, novel food application. At 3, Player and Imogen. At 2, United Oil and Gas. Ilika at 1. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.